The 5 at 5 is brought to you, as always, by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Jeff, let's start with Georgia's opponents this year. Name some individuals, not the team specifically, but different guys that have you worried, that you'd be worried about this this offseason leading into the matchups this fall.
Well, Devontae Smith would sure be at the top of my list.
Yeah, he's already notched pretty big catch.
Yeah, definitely made his mark. Dylan Moses, Alex Leatherwood coming back. I think looking at Auburn, Bo Nix would certainly stand out. Moving on down to Florida, I think you got to say Trask with what he's been able to do. I'm glad Zuniga's gone, by the way. You know, we could do, I'm sure we'll have time, we could also do a kind of happy graduation or departing for the NFL as well, and that's a really big list. I think for Tennessee, I'm glad those receivers are gone. But the linebacker, was it Tua? Is that how you say his name?
He is, and that O-line.
He is a really good player. And then, that offensive line is going to have a lot of elite recruits that figure to perform well for them. Kentucky, they lost their whole defense after 2018, so they should be pretty sound on defense, and I think their offensive line as a whole. But this is just one of those years, kind of when you look at the schedule, Georgia's breaking in a new quarterback, and the Bulldogs are going to be facing a lot of quarterbacks with experience. That includes Terry Wilson for Kentucky.
Yeah, you know, it's I know that the Danny Cannell, of course, ruffled the feathers because he actually suggested that Florida might be the team to beat in the SEC East. But you know, what he said about Georgia is not, to me, it's not unfair. It's that, you know, Jamie Newman is a transfer, and you're just kind of working on an assumption that you're going to plug him in and he's going to work no problem. But Georgia's got a lot to replace on the offensive line. He is got a very good receiver in George Pickens and another one, hopefully, in Dominic Blaylock, who's returning from an injury. So we'll see about him. But it still is, you know, at least early on in the year. I mean, the Florida game is deeper into the season, as we know. But, you know, you got to build some chemistry and some familiarity with your receiving group there. And that's, you know, you go back and look at his numbers last year at Wake Forest. He had a couple of really good receivers, including one in Sage Surratt, who ended up missing the last month of the season. And over the last month of the year, I mean, Newman's numbers were bad. He couldn't complete half his passes in any of those games. He threw a bunch of interceptions. But, you know, so his receiving core, you'd like to think, at least just with Pickens, will be upgraded. But it's also a connection that he's got to make and some timing to get down. You've also got a new offensive coordinator in Todd Monken, too. And now, you know, it's a strange offseason where you haven't had any spring practices. So some of these teams that have, you know, I think more parts coming back are definitely in a position where they might could be advantageous for them this season.
No, that's exactly right. And, you know, and here's the thing, too. If Jamie Newman were stepping into the 2018 offense, you know, where you had Swift and Holyfield and Nauta and Werner and Hardman and Ridley and Holloman and Godwin, that'd be one thing. But there are a lot of question marks on this offense. I think the offense is going to wind up being good. I love Zamir White. I think Kenny McIntosh is good. And I think James Cook is good. And you know, the receiving core is going to be young mostly, but it's got some potential. You got huge question marks at tight end. I think Georgia's got a tremendous offensive line coach in Matt Luke, but you know there's some moving pieces there. So you know there's in many ways. I think one of the things that we said about Newman is, you know, no matter how the year turns out, that he's certainly helping bridge things into 2021.
Yeah, well, and I think the biggest thing for Georgia is the Dogs have the second most experienced defense returning from a year ago behind Vandy. But the difference is Vandy's defense was horrible last season. Mm-hmm. Georgia's was one of the best. So you combine that with returning a good deal of the production from last season, and Georgia's defense is going to be elite and arguably potentially the best one in the country. But, yeah, I mean, then there is the other side of the ball, and you know, how much Georgia's offense will, you know, improve from a scoring standpoint than where it was last season. Because the thing, I mean, the the thing about Georgia's offense last year is, like, moving the ball wasn't a problem. It's not like the Dogs are just constantly going three and out and punting, except for, I guess, really the, you know, that fourth quarter of that game in Auburn with the notorious 0% success rate. But, you know, other than that, for the bulk of the season, the Dogs' offense wasn't, I think, as bad as it just looked when it was just a grind to score points from time to time. But you are losing a lot of production from that team a year ago and plugging in a lot of new faces in some key spots.
Well, and I think another key is going to be, does Georgia get a better coaching performance out of Todd Monken than it did out of James Coley? And I think with that, and maybe there was a disconnect there, the line's not going to be as talented as it was last year, but I think you're going to see Matt Luke get a lot out of this offensive line.
Well, and that's where with Monken and Newman, you keep coming back to the you know, when you're calling plays and you're figuring out what your offense wants to be. I mean, one thing about actually seeing a quarterback and getting some reps in there, and there's been the ability, as we found out, to at least have some virtual training and learning of the playbook and whatnot. But unless you're out there watching a guy actually take reps and maybe analyzing what his strengths and weaknesses are and then calling plays around those, you're not going to have as much of an ability to do that, at least early in the season. I mean, eventually you'll work out some of those kinks. And again, the plus there when it comes to Florida as a threat in the SEC East is that game is, you know, deep into the season. So
yeah, another thing too, kind of talking about the situation with losing spring practice, that's a spring practice that Dwan Mathis and Carson Beck also didn't get to play in, a redshirt freshman quarterback and a true freshman quarterback. So that, you know, that hurts as well, just in terms of their development looking ahead for the future.
Yeah. And so there's, I think, looking around college football this season, I mean, teams that have a good bit of returning production back could be in some decent positions. And, you know, that's good for Georgia on defense, maybe not so much for Georgia on offense. And I mean, Tennessee's got a lot coming back, but then Tennessee's in that position too where, well, they weren't really good on offense or defense last year. Now they return a good bit of their production on both sides, and I guess the big question for them on offense is, as we know, it was Jim Chaney's first year there, and now with a year under his belt and a good bit of his production coming back, and and what looks like it could be a really good offensive line too, can they take a big leap forward offensively?
The guys that they're going to miss, and I think Tennessee can get better offensively, but they're going to miss those receivers. I mean, Callaway and Jennings are big time players.
Yeah, and they had a couple of big catches against us. So.
Yes, they did.
In more than one year.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, because at least with Jennings too, he became one of those guys that was like, was he like a 10-year veteran?
Yeah,
there,
he was there a
Knoxville.
While.
He seemed to be there for forever. In the West, though, A&M is the team that you look at. They've got just about everything back on offense. They've got a boatload back on defense. They had a good offense last year. They had a great defense by any means, but it was a pretty good defense a season ago. So the no spring thing and having a decent amount of talent back, it's definitely shaping up that this is a year Jimbo, I mean, he ought at least go into those last couple games of the season with A&M right there with a shot at making it to Atlanta.
Yeah, I think they've got to be at least 9-1 going into that to kind of keep the natives from howling. And I'm telling you, Chris, the more we see it, I think Alabama's a big favorite. In fact, I think they're the team to beat to win it all this year. And it might have been, I hated that Tua got hurt, but the experience that Mac Jones got this past year, and then just getting these guys back. I was after the A&M game, I was talking to a couple of folks who work for them, and they said one thing that hit them. It wasn't quite the talent loss that we had. And again, Miko made the right decision with Ridley, with Holyfield, with Nauta, but they lost three guys that they felt, coulda, shoulda come back that were late round guys or guys that jumped. And just the more and more you see it, I know we've talked about this a lot, when you're talking about a senior, a fifth-year senior who's 22 years old, I just think teams that get seniors back, and look no further than Georgia in 2017, if they're already elite, just having that maturity, I think that makes a difference. And Bama got three first-round picks back who are going to be seniors this year.
Yeah, now they did just have four guys taken in the first round.
Yeah.
And they only went to the Citrus Bowl, though. So
yeah, Yeah. That's kind of become the norm for them, having all those first-round picks. They slumped to 11-2.
I know, but they really did underachieve last year, only making it to the Citrus Bowl.
But
all those first-rounders.
But when you talk about, we all know recruiting is a lifeblood, but I think retention, I think it goes recruiting and, you know, and development. Obviously, those go hand in hand. I think now retention is, you know, kind of that next thing to win it all. And look at Georgia getting there in 17 with Nick and Sony and Lorenzo Carter. That Alabama the Clemson defensive line in 18. Joe Burrow in 2019. And, you know, Bama's got three guys who would have gone in the first round back. That's a big edge. And, you know, Clemson getting ATN back. And that's, you know, so if you're a powerhouse and you're getting guys like that back for their senior seasons, it's a big edge.
Yeah, Alabama, I think they'll be fine. Give me a unit in the league or the country that you think will be better than expected despite heavy losses. Like LSU, they have heavy losses on offense.
Yes, they do.
But are they still going to be, though, really good on offense?
Probably not great. Let's see. I still think Florida's going to be good on defense. They're always good on defense. But
even on third down?
I like Georgia's chances against Florida on third down. I look at Ohio State, Chris, and I think the fact that they got Sermon from Oklahoma, that's going to ease the loss of Dobbins. I do think they're going to feel it on defense, but I think their offense, I don't think it'll be as good as this past year, but I think it'll still be a really, really good unit for them.
Well, overall, like, how much is it going to matter in that league with their schedule?
You would think, because really nobody came up and scared them this past year. I mean, I think at the very least, a team or two might be in the game in the fourth quarter this season.
The one, it's like Ohio State got a big lead on Penn State and then turned it over a couple times, and Penn State made it tight, but that was about it. And then looking at Ohio State this year, one of the most questionable games on their schedule would be that week two trip to Oregon, and that seems like there's a pretty high probability that that game ain't going to get played. So
no, you're exactly right. So, you know, the other team, I think, you know, talking about Sermon leaving, I mean, I get what Lincoln Riley has done, and Oklahoma has been incredible in the 21st century, but, you know, at some point that offense, you'd think it would take at least a little bit of a step back, though granted, you know, who outside of Texas, or unless maybe Gary Patterson's got something dialed up at TCU, now who else in that league could even slow them down a little bit? But I think the Oklahoma offense is going to be a big question mark.
Yeah, well, this will be the first time that he'll just have some...
Yeah, just a stud transfer.
Yeah, now that Spencer Rattler was a big-time recruit,
sure,
who's finally going to get his shot. But, I mean, as we've seen with Oklahoma, it's this, they've got to get better on defense. But no matter how you slice it with the Sooners, as good as they've been the last couple of years, they've still have been losing a game in the regular season. So I certainly wouldn't ticket them for a 12-0 season. And I think just based on... I think they've gotten to the point now where if they're not undefeated, they're not going to get a bid to the playoff, because there's got to be Oklahoma fatigue, because other than the Rose Bowl game against us, they just haven't even been competitive.
Yeah, and it's been the defense that has really just let them down. And obviously the team they had in 17, I mean, that was the best of the bunch there. I mean, you had Mayfield and Kyler Murray was his backup. I mean, that team was just loaded with sensational players there. Then the next year, Bama jumps on them 28-0. I know Oklahoma came back and made it a respectable score. And they were just housed this past year. It was one of those deals. And I'll kind of go back. It's great to be in the game. And look, what they've done has been incredible. But that game knocked them back. And if I could kind of draw you a parallel, and Oklahoma's not going to fall off like this, but, you know, Nebraska was there. They lost the heartbreaker to Miami on 1-2-84. They played in all those Orange Bowls. Nebraska finally got over the top against them. But when Miami got great again, that game for the 0-1 national championship, when it was 30-0 at halftime, like, that was one of those, like, big picture, would you rather be in the national title game? Yeah, but the way that turned out for the perception of the program, they'd have probably been better off, say, playing in the Fiesta Bowl and not getting humiliated. And I think Oklahoma might could say the same thing. It's great that, hey, we made the Final Four, we made the playoff, we can hang a banner for that. But as far as perception, they might have felt a little bit better off playing in the Cotton Bowl and winning that.
It didn't help Nebraska, though, that they fired Frank Solich and hired Bill Callahan.
That was a bad move. They went 9-3 and fired Solich, and then Bill Callahan. That's a Mount Rushmore awful hire for major programs.
Yeah, and I mean, that, you know, Frank Solich, fine. He was guilty of not being Tom Osborne, but the guy stayed in coaching at Ohio and is good. Actually, yeah, I mean, like, they would have been way better through the course of the 2000s. They wouldn't have just blown themselves into oblivion had they not made that move.
Correct, and then maybe he keeps them in a spot where it might not be Scott Frost per se, but maybe he's able to come in there when it's not just completely barren.
Right. All right, moving on in the five at five. So word is that, you know, some of these conferences that might have not all schools able to participate this year are getting in touch with each other, at least the individual schools are, about scheduling home and homes with conference opponents to make up for teams that aren't there. Could you see that playing out in the SEC this fall?
Now, let me clarify on this. When you're saying home and homes, are you saying playing the same team twice in 1 year?
Yeah. If you have a league where not all the schools can play, so if you, like, let's just, again, the Big Ten is an example. If you have Rutgers on the schedule this year and they can't play, you need to fill that spot. And so the idea would just be you would just schedule another team in your conference that you've already are playing.
I could see that playing out in the Pac-12 if the four California schools are late to the party and maybe, say, Utah and Colorado go home and home. Yeah, I don't know how.
Like four Apple Cups this year?
I don't know. You know, with the in-state rivalries, you might be hesitant to do it. But again, everybody understands this year is just going to look different. So if Arizona and Arizona State play twice, so be it. It'll just be one of those things. If that is a possibility, I don't think we're going to have to do that in the SEC. Plus, we've got 14. The Pac-12 seems the most likely, doesn't it? And then you're probably right. I would say the Big Ten, and I don't know how Syracuse or Boston College would be affected by this in the ACC. But, Chris, again, it just also gets back to, with the expansion, the absurdity of some of this travel. You're trying to get from Morgantown, West Virginia, to Lubbock, Texas, or to Ames, Iowa. And football's not that big. It's a huge traveling party, but it's the game's on Saturday. You leave on Friday. You're back on Saturday night. But, you know, we talk about this so often for swimming, for track and field. You know, those are sports that have big rosters as well. You know, trying to get to places from places like that. I mean, conferences were started because of geographic proximity.
Well, and the ACC is one that you really with potentially Syracuse and Boston College, with so many of those other schools, you know, obviously located in the South.
How long would it take you to drive from Syracuse to Coral Gables? I mean, come on. You can't get much further on the East Coast.
Well, I mean, yeah, you'd have to it'd be a two-day trip.
Yeah, it's absurd that they're in the same conference.
Yeah.
But I think so many people just started looking at it.
Although they used to be in the Big East together.
That too is true. But so many people started looking at it through just the football and men's basketball eyes. And you have to understand, it's different than the Knicks and the Heat both being in, you know, whatever, the Atlantic Division and the NBA. Because it's not just a professional basketball team. It's, you know, 18 to 20 sports teams. And who knows? I do think we'll see some changes in some non-revenue and some spring sports when it comes to travel for this. And, you know, I know for golf, I would like to see more match play. And, you know, certainly travel with what it's going to look like. Like, you know, or in Georgia, we've got an unbelievable schedule. Like for, I'm talking about men's golf here, going to places like, you know, Puerto Rico and Las Vegas and Hawaii and Pebble Beach. Maybe that gets cut back for a couple of years, and you know, Georgia plays Tech at the UGA golf course, and Georgia goes over and plays Auburn on their home course, which I think would be a great thing. But, you know, football is obviously the bell cow that drives it. But I just think for other sports, and I know seeing it firsthand, and these are great universities and great places, Fayetteville, Arkansas, Columbia, Missouri, and College Station, Texas, my feeling is they should be in the Big 12. That's a long way to go, and I get it. All that 95% of people care about is football and men's basketball. But you have to understand that there are all these other sports, the cost and the expense of that. I mean, Missouri being in the SEC East just doesn't make a lot of sense geographically.
You'd have been heading out there this weekend, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, isn't that right?
Yeah, and listen, I'd love to be going. And if it still works out that way, that's great, but – with obviously the economy taking a hit, a major hit, and you know, maybe all this will continue on like that. I don't know. I would just guess for the upcoming scholastic / sports calendar year that you're going to see some of the usual travel cut down, and maybe even for a couple of years, because that's expensive. Those charter flights, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000.
Yeah, well, you might see some of the, and I know that we're talking about these conferences that are, you know, spread out wide geographically now, but even with those, though, you might just be confined to, like, having conference games and matches only and not having teams from all over the country come in and compete and whatnot.
You're right, but the problem is, in the SEC, the ACC in particular, and the Big 12, the population of the member schools are from all over the country.
Yeah. But you're looking at, you know, at that point, though, it's, sorry, maybe you're making then one trip if you got to go to Missouri as opposed to, you know, you're going to Chicago or something for the national indoors.
For sure. No, I think you're exactly right. But, I mean, I was just thinking, you know, we've talked about this before. We just ran into something a few years ago where we played Clemson on a Tuesday night, and the next week we played Tech on a Tuesday night. Talking about baseball here. And, like, when we played Clemson, they were going to Pitt the following weekend, and Clemson was going to Boston College. And they weren't playing each other that year. That was, like, the first time Clemson and Tech hadn't played baseball since 1973. And that's one where it's like, oh, that's just that's ridiculous.
Yes. And then when, like, Miami is going to like South Bend and the games are snowed out.
Yes, and that's one too where, you know, I think even, you know, with common sense and we all understand why these deals were struck, and the money is great for everywhere, but then you get to the devil in the details, and I think even the most ardent of ACC supporters said, "Oh yeah, this conference expansion is great." And like, don't you're not allowed to answer. So, huh? Well, that's the way the schedule breaks. Well, no. Yeah, that's one where, you know, anybody with common sense would say that's ridiculous. And what you were saying about Miami and Notre Dame, let me clue you in on this too. Like, we were playing Tech 3 or 4 years ago, and they had taken 2 out of 3 at Pitt. And, you know, my buddy Randy Carroll at Wiley Ballard, who does their radio, they had said, listen, they're awful, but the Saturday game, it was like 30 degrees. There was a ball hit to center field that normally their center fielder gets to. I mean, the guy's legs are frozen out there. And trust me, Pitt would rather be in Atlanta. Notre Dame would rather be in Miami. Boston College would rather be in Clemson. They'll give up those home games for the warm weather there.
Yeah.
So that's
vacation,
but that's again part of it where with the conference expansion and some of it, and we get what it was for. And I know a lot of people, who cares? It's baseball, it's tennis. Well, I care, and there are people who do care, and those sports need to be put in the best possible positions to succeed. So, you know, maybe that's a deal where we can, and when times are bad, I think we all agree that good things can come out of it. So maybe in a spot like that, the ACC powers that be could get together and be like, listen, guys, we know how all this is, but, you know, Tech, Clemson, Miami, we ain't going to Pitt, Notre Dame, and Boston College this year. You know, I tell you, why don't we have we'll chop up the divisions. You guys can all play each other, and you get a spot in the ACC tournament, and then, you know, we'll get the Florida schools and Tech and Clemson in a division, and the Carolina schools in a division, just where it makes sense geographically.
Which is like what, you know, baseball's talking about, proposal of just playing all, you know, East, Central, and West all just play one another.
I think that is a very good idea.
All right, the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems, more than a system, a solution.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.